welcome to another Illinois football podcast. I'm Northwest Herald sports writer Joe Stevenson, and along with me are from the Kankakee Daily Journal, Steve Soucy, our professor of IHSA bracketology, and Kyle Neighbors. Guys, how you doing?
Not too bad, Joe.
Pretty well.
So, well, let's start like we usually do with the big boys in 8A. A couple big games this week in the West Suburban Silver, one of our favorite conferences to talk about, some heavy hitters in that one. What did you guys think? You know, Hinsdale Central beats Lions 28-21, and Glenbard West avoids a third straight loss by beating Oak Park River Forest 56-39. What are your thoughts on those games?
Well, I think that's sorted it out a little bit more for us now, finally. I think Hinsdale Central has separated themselves, I think, from the rest of the group now with the wins that they've picked up recently. So, I mean, you have to look at it that way and kind of stacking them up in the sense that Hinsdale Central looks like they're on the top, and then, you know, Lions a step behind, and then Glenbard West kind of regrouped. It wasn't exactly how I saw it playing out, but we've discovered over the past couple of weeks that there are lots of good football teams in that conference, and there's going to be some uncertainty from week to week. But Hinsdale Central has cleared all of its hurdles thus far, and as such, look to be well positioned for a top four or five seed in the 8A bracket.
Yeah, Steve, you had them projected at number two as of this week, but that could change. But that, yeah, right.
Yeah, it's basically, I mean, if they run the table, their only hurdle for being on top of the pile is the fact that Loyola's stacked up some more playoff points. If they were to lose to Brother Rice in their showdown game, Brother Rice would move to the top of that pile. So I don't think Hinsdale Central can get all the way to the top of the 8A or the 8A seedings, but obviously sitting in a two-hole now with a little bit of a cushion over the teams directly behind them. So it's pivotal for them to run the table and get themselves in a nice bracketing, because as we talked about last week, it hasn't changed. I've still got 18 teams projected with at least 8 wins that are in 8A. So the field is stacked. You want to put yourself as high up that chart as you possibly can.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, that the Loyola Brother Rice game comes up next week in week 9. That's a huge one. Brother Rice faces Providence this week, right? A 4-3 Providence team?
I think that's correct.
What do you think of Homewood Flossmoor, which you have projected right now? I think they're third in the poll, and you have projected as a 4 seed in 8A. They won big last week.
Yeah, they did, and that's one of the things that now you're looking ahead, kind of the interesting underlying thing that happened this week to me as far as the Southwest Suburban goes is Bolingbrook lost this week, which puts them on 4 losses. And in week 9, they have Homewood Flossmoor. And if you remember last year, this was the exact same scenario. Homewood Flossmoor was highly ranked. Bolingbrook had 4 losses. Everybody was writing off Bolingbrook, saying there's no way they can beat Homewood Flossmoor. So it'll be interesting to see if Homewood Flossmoor will keep their eye on the prize this year and finish this regular season off with a 9-0 record, because they have Thornton this week, and this isn't as good a Thornton team as has been in the past. It's not even close. So I would think that Homewood Flossmoor would go into week 9 at 8-0 and facing that Bolingbrook team that is going to be battling for its playoff lives once again.
I kind of can't see that happening 2 years in a row, you know?
Yeah, I can't either, but I didn't see it happening last year either, right. So I guess I can't completely discount it.
And I think at this point you can't count anything out of the Southwest Suburban, because it's been, week in, week out, going a little bit crazy here lately.
Another interesting game this week, Barrington and Palatine, two teams that are ranked in the poll. You have Palatine, you're picking Palatine to go 9-0, Steve, and get the number 3 seed in 8A. What do you think of this game coming up with two undefeateds?
Well, I'm kind of trusting what other people have told me about these teams at this point, because I've seen neither one of them. I haven't even seen either one of them on tape at this point. So basically what it comes down to for me is that I'm just kind of trusting the gut of a couple of people that have seen these teams and give a slight edge to Palatine. But by no means am I comfortable declaring that I think Palatine's got a slam dunk win here. I think it'll be a pretty good football game.
Yeah, it looks like from the just comparing the scores that Palatine beat some of the teams in the mid-suburban that they both play by a little larger margins, but you can't always that doesn't always tell the whole story.
Yeah, it really can't, and that, like I said, comparative results can sometimes only take you so far, especially when you've got two really good football teams going up against one another. You know, the different philosophies and what you do at the end of games can sometimes lead to why someone won by 25 rather than 35. So, you know, you can't take a lot of stock out of that sometimes. It helps, but it doesn't tell the whole story.
Yeah. And what else stands out with you guys from what you saw in 8A last week? Anything else?
You know, jumping back to that really quick to the Palatine-Barrington matchup, I just pulled up last year's game, just kind of get an idea where these two teams are, and it looks like Palatine came out on top, but it was only 26-24, so we might be looking at a pretty good game this week. Outside of that, in 8A, I think we've pretty much covered it. Lincoln Way East continues to roll there, and I think we found out Oak Park River Forest was well behind the other three in that conference, which is, I think, what we all expected.
And something that jumped out to me, Steve, in your projections this week, Glenbard West was pushed down to 7A, where it won state last year. What happened there?
Well, it was kind of a weird week this week in terms of, like, where the bubbles went, because there was a lot of teams in 6 and 7A that I kind of regraded a little bit, and these are all the teams. When I say regraded, these are all the teams that are sitting on that 5-4, 4-5 fence. And if I go a different way with them, it tends to change where teams are at, because maybe the team that I'm taking out is a 7A team, the team that I'm putting in is an 8A team. So there were some switches in that regard. And once again, we talked about this last week, the West Suburban Silver is messing with things again, because Leiden won a game that I didn't really expect them to win, so I had to factor them into the equation, and they needed a spot created for them in the 8A field, and what that did, coupled with, you know, the Bolingbrook loss and some other things, caused the line to go up just a little bit, and they were right on it last week, and they got bumped right back into 7 again. But it's once again, it's a very unstable situation, but the closer we get to week 9, the more locked in these teams get, because we'll get into week 9 and we'll have 27 spots in the 8A field that are locked in with only a little bit of movement, because you'll have all these teams that have 6-plus wins that already have clinched their playoff spots, so it's only a matter of who's filling in those last 3 or 4 spots in the draw. That's what you're seeing here, but that's why you'll see Glenbard West probably bouncing back and forth between 7 and 8 all the way up till week 9.
Okay, well, good. And two of the teams that will be in that 8A bracket are Oswego at 7-0 and Oswego East at 6-1. Now we're going to talk with Kristen Sharp from the Oswego Ledger about those two teams. We're talking with Kristen Sharp from the Oswego Ledger. And Kristen, Oswego has allowed only 65 points this season after a 63-14 win over Joliet Central. That's only the third time somebody's got double digits on them. What did you see from Oswego this week?
Funny enough, we were texting back and forth with the other reporter that I had out at that game. She's an Oswego alum, Laura Medina, and was covering that game on their homecoming. Joliet Central is a team that not too long ago lost, I think, 71-0 to Oswego East, and they ran off the opening kickoff for a touchdown against Oswego. We said they kicked the bear in the mouth and waited around to see what happened, because Oswego was not happy. They pretty much ran the tables, and I think Joliet got a late score in, but I wouldn't look too much past the 14 points they gave up. The one was, I think, an early fluke, and the later one was probably due to some substitutions and things like that.
Yeah, 65 points after 7 games. That's amazing. That's really getting it done. On what do they do so well defensively?
We were talking about this, in previous weeks. They don't have that, Division I linebacker that, is racking up the tackles. They really have a multitude of weapons out there. They've got linemen that are getting the sacks. They've got, guys in the back that are that are getting, you know, fumble recoveries and providing those turnover opportunities for their offense. You know, they're able to put up points on their own. They really just have so many different pieces that are working for them that, you know, in the time I've covered Oswego, this is one of the best defenses I think I've ever seen them put together, because there isn't, you know, that one guy that is dominating back there. They just have such a great, not only line, but the guys in the secondary too, that are really, really impressive right now.
Yeah. So you saw Oswego East, and that was a shutout of Plainfield Central, 42-0. What did the Wolves do there to get that one?
They were looking much better. You know, they had a couple of turnovers 2 weeks ago against Plainfield North. They also had several fumbles against Oswego the week before. So they really just needed to clean things up, get back to what they do well. You know, the coach said he was possibly putting in a little bit too much offense at them as the season progressed, and they were doing so well. I think they slowed things down. They went back to basics. Jalen Banks had a great game as quarterback. And, you know, Ivory Kelly Martin still looks good. You know, he's pretty unstoppable once, especially he can find a hole or get on the edge. But, you know, the quarterback really had a great game, and that really led to them kind of getting on back on track on Friday night.
So at this point, Steve Soucy from the Kankakee Daily Journal, who knows all about the playoffs and projects these things, has Oswego as a number 6 seed in 8A. And East as a 17 seed in 8A. You know, what do you? That's very fluid. Those things can change. You know, depending on who wins and so forth, and with the possible strike in the Chicago Public Sure. Schools. But what do you think of that? You know, what that would mean.
Yeah, you know, 8A is such an animal. You know, Coach LeBlanc from Oswego East had said, you know, just with the talent this year from 8A, you know, even if they come out of this at, you know, 7-8-1, you know, they are probably anticipating a little bit of a lower or higher seed at 17 like that, because there is so much top talent in 8A this year. But just seeing Oswego East as much as I have this year, to see them as a 17 is kind of shocking. But at the same time, you know, I think their hopes of being 8A or 7A are kind of dashed. And that's really interesting, you know, to see Oswego that high up, like you said, after only scoring as many points as they have this year, but having such an offensively explosive team like Oswego East, and possibly coming out of the season with one loss being 17. You know, it's quite a year for 8A this year.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy, because you would think that 8-1 would get you a home game, but there's so many. I think there's like something like 14 or so teams still undefeated in 8A.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's going to be tough for Oswego East too, because they have been a 7A team both other times that they've qualified for the playoffs. They only have won one of those first round games. So to not only jump to 8A, but kind of have to get over that hurdle of winning a first round 8A game, you know, mentally kind of similar, you know, challenges as far as facing Oswego. You know, they have the talent to do it, you know, to win that first round 8A game. But I think, you know, mentally for a school that's never done that before, that'll certainly be, you know, another factor on the field.
What about some of the other teams in your area, the smaller schools, who could get into the playoffs from your other teams?
Yeah, we should have a third playoff team from Kendall County in Plano. They're sitting at 5-2 right now. They're going to go down to Reed Custer on Friday night, and they shouldn't have any trouble with Reed Custer, but Reed Custer is a little bit of a dangerous team at 3-4. They need to win their last two games, and so really they're going to probably give Plano all they can handle on Friday night, but Plano shouldn't have any trouble even getting in through that Week 9 game. They're seeing a 1-6 Westmont team, so I'm expecting Plano to come out of this with just those two losses. They'll just need to get past Reed Custer and Westmont, and they should be sitting at 7-2. So they should get it into 4A. But again, 4A looks similar to 8A. You've got a whole bunch of undefeated teams there at the top, and things should shake out probably a little unfavorable for Plano with those two losses.
All right, Kristen. Well, thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Okay, guys, moving on to 7A. Kyle, I hear there's a pretty decent game coming up for you guys down there Friday, huh?
Yeah, Bradley Bourbon A, Lincoln Way East. You know, it's been kind of hard to get a grasp, as I was saying earlier, with where the Southwest Suburban is at, because you look at Bolingbrook, now with four losses, you had Lincoln Way Central come up with a win this week that we didn't expect. You know, Bradley's beating all these teams, but I think all along we've been waiting to see where they would be at against Lincoln Way East. I personally think Lincoln Way East is going to come away with a victory here. I think Zeus and I were trying to set a line. I think we were saying maybe 8 to 10 points, somewhere in that range. But you know, when you have the talent Bradley does, it's going to be at home. Should be a fun week.
Yeah, and who was it? I remember I was looking through scores. Who did Lincoln Way Central knock off this week?
AB Bolingbrook.
Yeah, that's right.
And I want to say, was it who did Lockport beat this week? Didn't they come up with a win?
Lincoln Way West.
Yeah. So yeah. Kind of craziness happening in that conference right now.
Yeah, right in the middle, there's a lot of shuffling the deck at seemingly on a weekly basis, and then right underneath it, there's some teams that didn't play as strong a schedule early on that have more wins. So it gets kind of confusing when you look at somebody like Thornridge, who played a really soft schedule to start the season, and you see them playing a team around 500 that has played a much stronger schedule. It makes it difficult to kind of forecast what's going to happen here. So the whole conference with the 13 teams, it's causing for a lot of, well, they played these guys, they didn't play these guys, so what do you make of that, and what do you make of this? It's really hard to sort those teams out. I think you've got the obvious two teams, I think, that are right at the top in Homewood Flossmoor and Lincoln Way East, and then Bradley's right at the absolute top of that second tier. But then after that, there's a whole jumble of teams that you could honestly rank between fourth and ninth in that league, and it's hard to tell which is which.
Do you guys think that a traditional state power like Mount Carmel, which is right now 4-3, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Can they be a factor in 7A with the tough schedule that's played? I think Caravan only lost to Loyola by a touchdown, right? 35-28. Yeah. Can that team be one of those middle seeds in 7A and be a factor?
Well, I certainly think they can, and the interesting thing, and they keep coming up each week. I think every week this season they've come up around that 15 to 18 range seed-wise, which it's just going to be, to me, it's going to be very interesting to see which side of the bracket they fall on, because if they fall on the side of East St. Louis, we might have a second-round matchup with East St. Louis and Mount Carmel. If they don't and they fall on the other side, I think that's a potential situation where Mount Carmel could make a deep run, because while I have Glenbrook North currently carrying the number one seed in 7A and running the table, I am not convinced that they are upper caliber in that classification. Their division and their conference is not very strong, and their non-conference games didn't really tell us a whole heck of a lot either. So if Mount Carmel ends on that side of the bracket, which right now I have them on that side of the bracket, I think they could be really dangerous and make a pretty deep run. But if they end up on East St. Louis's side, watch out, because that's probably one of the most explosive second round games we've ever had.
Steve, yeah. Where do you have Mount Carmel finishing right now with 5 or 6 wins?
6.
You have them beating Montini and Providence?
Yes.
You have them seated at 17, which would just be right in the middle of 7A.
Right. So yeah. And it becomes interesting. I mean, there's lots of layers to this, because obviously when you look at any classification, the first thing that I'm looking at right now is CPS teams, where they fall, how that's going to affect things if this does run a long time. But the top half of this bracket, I mean, it doesn't have a ton of Chicago Public League schools, so that's not going to change that much, I don't think, what goes on in 7A. But to me, wherever East St. Louis lands in this bracket is where you have to see where everyone else falls into place, because I think they're the favorite, and then anyone else that's going to get them can get them. There are some teams in here that I feel like could get them on the right day. I don't think they're invincible by any stretch of the imagination. But there are quite a few teams in here that I think still have to do some proving before I would even consider putting them in the opportunity of winning that. The weird thing about 7A is I've only got 3 teams projected to go 9-0, and I'm not convinced 2 of them are all that good. So that's that's a problem that I mean that's just the way we do this. And I mean, Rolling Meadows could finish with less than 30 playoff points, and if you look around, that's pretty hard to do. So their schedule has to be questioned. They might be a very good football team, but they haven't had a proving ground game yet, and they're not going to have one either.
Yeah, and I was looking at some stuff here before we did this, and tomorrow is supposed to be the day that CPS, whether we find out if it's going on strike or not. What do you think? What have you heard? I'm thinking if they do go on strike, that it's probably not going to be resolved real quickly.
Yeah, I do too. And it's kind of a layered thing with me when I'm looking at it, just from a football perspective. You know, I wonder if they're out for just a couple of days. I mean, with the Chicago Public League playing games on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, would that mean that they would jumble the entire weekend schedule to try to squeeze in the week 8 games to finish that out? And if they get to the end of the week, then a few schools that have to take double forfeits are eliminated from the equation. Right now I have 18 Chicago Public League schools getting into the playoffs. And if this is a one-week strike where they miss 1 week of games, 4 of those teams would be dropped out because they would pick up a loss that I was not anticipating that they would pick off because of the forfeits. But then if the other ones, if this goes into next Wednesday, which is the drop-dead date, according to everyone that I've talked to about this, that's when everyone would pretty much be removed. Because if you have a strike that extends longer than seven days, you have to practice 3 days before you can play a game. That's a rule that's on the books. And if you think of it, if the strike is not resolved by next Wednesday, they would need to practice on Thursday, Friday, and they obviously cannot practice on Saturday, which is the last day that we can play games before the bracketing. So this thing has to be resolved by Wednesday morning so they can get into a practice that Wednesday afternoon. And if that doesn't happen, based on the current IHSA rules, all 18 of those teams would be taken out of the bracket because they couldn't. The simplest reason for that is they couldn't reach the minimum of 8 games played, which you can argue the legitimacy of that rule and question why it's there. Currently, that is the first rule on the books that will get striking schools out of the situation where they're holding up the playoff draw process, because you have to play 8 games. If you receive a forfeit win, that counts towards your 8. But if you have forfeit losses on your schedule and can't get to 8 games played, then you're out. So it's a slippery slope, and obviously there's a lot of people counting the days. I've heard some discussion already about certain schools planning to file an injunction if we get to that point. So then we get into the whole court system about how this is done. And this is not, I mean, I'm hopeful that this thing gets resolved quickly, but if it does not, it's going to get super messy, and there's going to be all kinds of factors that we as high school football fans are not accustomed to dealing with heading into playoff pairings night. I think that playoff pairings night scenario could be really, really tricky if this plays out in a negative way over the next 8 to 10 days.
Yeah, can you guys imagine? Let's say they do get it resolved Wednesday morning, right? And they practice Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Then you're going to have the entire Chicago Public League trying to play games Saturday morning, and we have no idea what. Have you heard anything like what time the IHSA would want that field set? Like,
oh, there's actually a rule on the books that says you have to start any Saturday game that you're playing by 1 p.m.
Yeah. So then
think about that.
Then how do you decide which games go first? You know what I'm saying? Like, would they?
Yeah. It's super problematic because you have to think of, well, you just let the teams that are in the playoff chase play. Well, if you only do that, then those teams are going to be significantly hurt by all those other teams that didn't play because they're not going to pick up any playoff points. So what you're going to see is, those, even if they were to do that, there'd be a bunch of teams that were trying to qualify to get themselves in, and if they were on that 5-4 bubble, they could potentially pick up no other playoff points because none of the teams that they played during the regular season played another game. So it could be a really weird situation. I don't think personally they have enough venues to accommodate that many Chicago Public League football teams in that short of a time, because that's why they play on Thursday now, because of the fact that they don't have as many playing surfaces that can legally hold a high school football game. So they have to play those games on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday to get them all in. Imagine the chaos if they tried to cram essentially 45 games into a 6 to 7 hour window on Saturday morning.
And am I right, guys? I just looked something up, and is Phillips's division in the Chicago Public League only play 8 games?
No. What happens with the Illini Division Chicago Public League schools is the week 9 of their schedule is the first round of the Chicago Public League playoffs.
Okay.
So
okay.
It's bracketed after the week 8 games are done with. Those teams in the Illini divisions are seeded, and they are put into a bracket-style format where they usually, like, for example, Phillips will win their division. They will play a fourth-place team from another Illini division that they didn't play during the regular season. So the top 16 teams from the Illini divisions are put into the main Chicago Public League playoff draw. So that's going to be chaotic, too, because those Week 8 games that may or may not get played affect the seeding of the Chicago Public League playoff bracket. So it's all wrinkled out like that way. So the 24 teams that you see in the Illini divisions, the public league, they're showing 8-game schedules because we don't know yet who their week 9 opponent is.
Okay. I figured it had to be something like that, because I thought that was weird that I only saw the 8 games there. But yeah, this is really interesting stuff. But,
yeah, it's so difficult to do what I'm doing with this, and not that I'm complaining because I like all the layers of this and all this other stuff, but it really does get super chaotic because there's so many factors that come into play with this thing when it's a normal year. And when you add this wrinkle, I mean, I could sit here and talk about the ramifications of just 5 schools getting taken out of this situation for an hour. I mean, I can't even begin to describe like the number of changes that would lead to what's on the bubbles and who moves into what classes and all this other stuff. And then we've got the whole wrinkle beyond that of if the public league schools drop out, then we've got a bunch of 4 and 5 teams that suddenly have hope to get into the playoffs because you need to get to 256 teams somehow. And it looks to me right now that if you take out those public league schools, 8 to 12 teams with 4 and 5 records are going to be needed to fill out the rest of this playoff field. So all of a sudden, there are teams out there that have already piled up 5 losses that are thinking, well, our postseason dreams are over with. Well, not so fast. I mean, it's not, I mean, yeah, that may be true in some cases with teams with low playoff points, but there are some out there that have a stack of them. And they're the first place you go when you have vacancies in that 256 team field. Talked about a little bit last week. It's never happened before. We've had a few 4 and 5 conference champions, just a handful. But this could be a pretty big deal for some teams out there that played super strong schedules and picked up 5 losses.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. Well, should we move on to 6A?
Yeah, sure.
Any other thoughts on 7A?
No.
Okay. Well, 6A, a couple of games that stood out this week to me were the Leonard Bowl down south. Ken Leonard from Sacred Heart Griffin coaching against his son Derek at Rochester. And SHG wins that one 33-28. The other big one is Rockford East beating Boylan 20-14. What did you guys think of the Sacred Heart Griffin and Rochester game? Is it about what we expected from two of the state's best programs?
Well, I wasn't all that surprised with the result. And it came down to the final play, which is pretty much what I had thought from looking at both of those two teams heading into it. I figured it was going to be a very close game, and Rochester had somewhat of an opportunity to win the game at the end there. And that's, I mean, that's just a testament to two very strong programs and obviously the wrinkle that you mentioned with father versus son. Those have been some great games over the past decade or so, and this one is just another chapter with that. And this doesn't change my opinion of either one of those teams. I think Sacred Heart is a very viable threat to win 6, and I think Rochester is a very strong and viable threat to win 4.
Yeah, apparently Rochester was down in that game. Tremaine Lee, the running back from Sacred Heart, had a big game with three touchdowns, and it was 33-21. Rochester scored late and then got an onside kick and tried a flea flicker or something on the last play, and it was knocked down. I think that's what I read from the Springfield
State Journal. That's why I saw it too.
Yeah, from what I'm gathering, it wasn't like, you know, a 70-yard flea flicker. It does sound like it was from at least in Sacred Heart territory.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, what about so I just was checking this out. Rockford East had not beaten Boylan, which was 6-0 in 28 years. Rockford East has won three games now for only the second time in 15 years. Nobody could have seen this coming, I don't think. And, Steve, what does this do for a team like – I'm looking at it from a local angle, from a kind of a selfish standpoint because the teams we cover. What does this do for Cary Grove now to move up and get a higher seed in 6A?
Well, it did help them out in that situation because they leapfrog Boylan if Boylan's able to win out because Grove has more points. And that's one of the things about Boylan and their conference. You know, when you play in a lock conference, which is you basically have 10 teams in your conference, you play all the other nine, you don't play any non-conference games, there's some security in that because you're going to get a consistent number of points that's going to get you in the playoffs if you're a 5-4 team. They've never failed to do that. But there's also not a lot of security in that if you're a high win team, because the maximum amount of points that you can get as an 8-1 team in a lock conference is 37, and that's not very many. So Cary Grove is going to go over the top of them into the north bracket and move into a 2-seed position based on what's going on here, and that's a real good thing for them because, as you well know, who the 1-seed is.
Yeah.
So the earliest those two could meet in the scenario that I see right now would be in the semifinals, which I think would be what both programs would want. So that's a good thing for this bracketing, and it puts them in a better situation now, I think, in regards to that, because I mean there's not a lot of 8-win 9-win teams on that side of the bracket. But the ones that look to get there, Cary Grove will be on top of them because the other two are both members of the Nick 10, which, like I just mentioned, lock conference, not a lot of playoff points.
Yeah, Prairie Ridge sitting there at number one is 7-0 and a powerhouse, a semifinalist last year in 6A, and beat Cary Grove 26-14. It was a good game in the opener, but the Wolves have just been – they've just been rolling people since, and actually so has Cary Grove. So, boy, I tell you, here in McHenry County, we're just delighted at that possibility of a semifinal with those two if it comes to that.
Yeah, it would be. I think it would be a great thing to have that happen if they were able to ferret it out like that. And it should be pretty interesting because, I mean, when I look at that North bracket, I know there are some good teams in there that might be able to put a monkey wrench in that. But I don't see a whole bunch of them, to be completely honest with you. So I think the depth of that bracket kind of skews to the south a little bit. So, I mean, I think there's an open path to make that semifinal game happen.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, a little historical perspective from our angle, those two teams actually played in a semifinal in 2009. Prairie Ridge was a surprise that year because I think it was a three-loss team going into that game, and Cary Grove pounded them pretty good and then went on and won the state title, beat Providence that year. But that was the first of three straight appearances for Prairie Ridge in the semifinals, and the third year the Wolves won that one and went on and beat Richwoods and won a state title. So that's pretty interesting from our aspect up here. How about, down your way, how about Crete Moni? Is Crete Moni a viable threat in the southern part of 6A?
I think Crete's super talented, and they've had their issues for whatever reasons, making deep runs other than the one state title that they do have. But I think they're a very good team, and they do what I would encourage a lot of very talented teams to do. They play a pretty stacked schedule. I mean, so they're going to go into these playoffs and not freaked out by what they see because they'll be a used to it. But you know, when they go south, they're going to be a fairly high seeded team. As long as they can keep themselves away from making, you know, some bad road trips that potentially could be in there, I think they're in pretty good position right now. And if they can get themselves into maybe a semifinal round game with, say, a Sacred Heart Griffin, I think that's an interesting football game. There's no doubt about it. And it, depending on where that game is at, because it can be tough to play at Springfield Stadium down there. I've seen it myself firsthand on multiple occasions. It should be interesting. So, they're a team down there that I think can make some noise. That, you know, they're not way down there. I think I have them at a five, but
yes, you had them at five.
They're a kind of team that is definitely interesting. The one thing that really kind of threw me for a loop this week in 6A was when Marmion beat St. Lawrence. And I know Kyle and I have talked a lot about how much we like St. Lawrence. And that really threw me to the point where I was convinced that score was wrong. So that was, I mean, I went looking around and found out that they won. It was a huge win for Marmion, who needed the win desperately to get themselves back into the conversation for the playoffs after starting 4-0. And maybe that Marmion team's a little bit better than I thought they were. And maybe that St. Lawrence team isn't quite as good as I thought either. So that was the kind of telling game that came out of 6A for me this week.
How good is Lamont?
I don't know. I mean, that's a team that has fairly good playoff points. And, I mean, their conference is not usually that strong. So it's hard to tell right now. And they've had some narrow misses this year. I mean, I know Revis is an okay football team, but if you're a serious threat for winning whatever class you end up in, because Lamont's been bouncing back and forth between 5 and 6, I think you got to bring the hammer down on a team like Revis, and they only won by, I believe, 2 points. So, and that's really the only top-notch team that they've played, and Revis doesn't exactly have a track record of being a team that you really need to worry about. So I questioned their schedule a little bit, and then I questioned beyond that whether or not they'd match up all that well with some of the elite teams in this class.
Yeah, they only beat Thornton Fractional South by 2 points this week, which isn't exactly a sterling program in itself.
Yeah, it's so, like I said, their conference, you know, has some teams that have perennially make the playoffs but don't usually do much when they're there. I mean, Richards on the other side is a strong program, but they're not even where they were, say, 5 or 6 years ago either. So that conference is kind of confusing, just in the sense of who the good teams are and who the teams might not be. But I don't see them as being a legitimate threat, although it wouldn't surprise me to see them go at the very least a couple of rounds, just because of the way it stacks up.
Well, let's look at 5A. A big game downstate in the Big 12. Number one in 5A, Peoria Central holds off Danville, which was in the poll last week, number six in 6A, 42-40. That sounds like a great game.
And, oh, they didn't hold them off at all. They were trailing by they were trailing by large amounts for the entire game and rallied with, I believe, 3 touchdowns in the last 7 minutes to win the game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yes, they were down. They had dug themselves a pretty impressive hole, and then all of a sudden they just came back like gangbusters. And I know Peoria can score points, but I mean, and I've said this before, and I was talking to one of the coaches that played Danville earlier in the season over the weekend, and I think I just misjudged Danville. I think this is a pretty good football team that is probably not getting its proper due, because based on what they were able to do right there with one of the teams that people are kind of pegging as a 5A favorite, Danville's a team that I would keep an eye on in 6A as well.
What do you think of Peoria Notre Dame losing to Champaign Central? Peoria Notre Dame, number three in 5A last week.
Yeah, that kind of threw me for a loop, because Champaign Central was just expected to be a better team based on their performance last year. They were actually ranked to start the season and have hit quite a few roadblocks along the way. And they were just trying to resuscitate their playoff hopes with a win over Peoria Notre Dame, but they've still got two more tough games on their schedule. So I have been confused about Peoria and Notre Dame all year long. They've kind of been up and down. There have been some scores that have kind of thrown me for a little bit of a loop on their schedule. They've managed to win those games despite some of those close scores. This one they weren't able to escape, though. So that conference has been one of the harder ones to try to figure out over the course of this season. But now it looks like, it looks like that maybe it's Peoria and Danville, and then Normal West is right there too. Excuse me, Normal Community. And then the other ones are all just going to kind of, I guess, beat each other up until we figure out what happened. The dust clears after week 9.
Sterling is the number one seed in the North and is ranked number 2, right?
Behind, yes,
Peoria Central, and put it on Rochelle 35-7. Do you anticipate that Sterling will hang on to that spot?
I can't see any way that
they got DeKalb next week.
Yeah, that could be a quality game for them. There's no doubt about that. But the way that they're just taking apart these teams right now, this has got to be one of the best teams that they've had. So, DeKalb's pretty good, I think, and it should be interesting to see what happens. That game's actually in week 9, I think.
Yes, that's what I meant.
Because they've got Ottawa this week, and they won't be pressed at all. They could probably send their JV team. So it'll be an 8-0 Sterling, 7-1 DeKalb in week 9, and DeKalb's a good team. So I'm not just gonna just write Sterling in at 9-0. I'll write it in pencil. I won't write it in pen. if that's where we're going with it.
So a big game for Nazareth. What do you think of that this week? Nazareth at 3-4, the defending 5A champs, right?
Yes.
And they have in week 9 they have 1-6 Marion Catholic, so you figure that's a victory. But this week they go to St. Vider. Can the Roadrunners pull that one off?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, it has been so hard to figure out what's going to happen in the East Suburban Catholic this year. And the one conclusion that I've kind of come to with that I at least believe at this point in time, St. Viator played a very soft schedule at the first part strong schedule, and kind of put them out of my mind for a little while. And then they started to pick off some wins against some middle of the pack teams in the East Suburban Catholic. And then they kind of came back to attention to me. I think that's a really good team that people are kind of sleeping on because they didn't start so well. So, I mean, obviously I think that Naz will win in week 9, but I don't think they win this week against St. Viator, especially up there at Viator, which right now that's almost the only way to decide half of these games that are so close when you look at them on paper. It's like last week, for example, in the same conference, I just looked at that Carmel Woodstock Marion game and wanted to pull my hair out.
Oh my God, Steve! Like, I saw that game. It's the best game I've seen this season. It was just fantastic stuff, back and forth. Carmel scored with 7 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. There were 3 more touchdowns in regulation.
Jeez,
it was so much fun, and it was messing with my deadline because they started late and it didn't get over till almost 11 o'clock. But it was still fun. It was a tremendous game, and Marion Central sitting at 3-4 and has Niles Notre Dame and St. Patrick left. And I'm telling you, I was impressed. I think Marion's a pretty good team, but it may be sitting home for the playoffs. They're going to have to win these next two unless it's one of the fortunate 4-5 teams that gets a break with the strike.
And they're definitely a candidate for that. They're one of the teams that I've taken a look at if that's what happens to them. But then, like you said, it's just one of those things that gets really tricky about this conference because, I mean, you just look, they just lost to Carmel, in overtime. And then Carmel beat Notre Dame by 2 points just a few weeks ago. So who's better there? I mean, Notre Dame and Woodstock Marion is the classic definition of a coin flip game. So I mean, obviously, I think that if Woodstock Marion wins this game, I think that they would be in in good shape to beat St. Patrick, who's kind of faded a little bit since a hot start. But, I mean, they could just as easily finish 3-6, and that wouldn't surprise me either.
Yeah.
So it's they're really, really tricky. And it's like the funny thing is I actually saw a misreported score on this game on Friday night. And I, like, when I first did my first draw, I had Marion in the draw because of that win. And then I took them back out when I found out that they lost. So that's how indecisive I am on that team right now. I can't make up my mind from minute to minute.
Well, I talking to Coach Mike Maloney at Marion, you know, after the game, he still thinks kind of like we've been talking. He said, no offense to the northern half of 5A, but they would love the chance to get in there. They feel like with the games, the teams they've played in this conference being one of the smallest teams, that they could do some damage in the northern half of 5A if they can just get there.
Yeah, and I wouldn't disagree with that.
I wouldn't either.
You look at that north bracket, and it's like I would think if they got in, they're probably sitting somewhere around a 13 or a 14 seed, and I've got back-to-back public league schools at 3-4 on the seed lines, and another team just above them at the 2 seed, I don't know that much about, but their Antioch just keeps winning. So, I mean, they keep staying where they're at. But, I mean, I would just on paper, just thinking about this out loud, I would like Woodstock Marion's odds against just about everybody they would play as an underseed if they got into that north bracket.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, let's wrap this up. What's a game that you guys are really interested in coming up for week 8?
Well, we talked about it earlier, but I'll be heading over Bradley Bourbon A Lincoln Way East. I want to know how Bradley fares against one of the elite teams in the state, because although they're ranked second, I'm not sure they should be that high. And I think we're going to find out right here where they deserve to be.
All right, Steve?
Yeah, there's a couple of them out there that are interesting to me. We've touched on a few of them already with Barrington and Palatine. That's one that I'm definitely interested in sizing up exactly what happens there. And I mean, from there, there's a lot of games this week, and I won't go through the whole list. There's a lot of games out there between teams that are like 5-2 and 4-3, that like they're fighting for spots right now. So it's pretty interesting to see how all those come out, because there's a lot of instability in the middle of conferences right now. So I'm hoping that some of that gets sorted out. But there's some small school football games that I find pretty interesting this week. Foreston is playing Pearl City Eastland in a battle of undefeateds between, and that should be interesting for both the 1 and 2A brackets. And then there's another one down there between Stockton and Freeport Aquin, both from the kind of the same conference conglomerations down there, both undefeated in that side of the division. So those are some really interesting games for me. I'm also really interested in a game. We didn't touch on the smaller schools that much this week, but kind of roughly from your area up there, I'm interested in that Genoa Kingston Richmond Burton game, just for the sake of maybe finding out exactly how good Genoa Kingston is, because in that Big Northern, they've kind of not played a lot of the, you know, they don't play Byron during the regular season. There's one other team that has a pretty good record. They don't play them either. They've managed to run undefeated, but I don't know if they've really played anybody that good yet. And I think Richmond Burton's an okay football team, especially when you're talking about the 4A level and the level of competition that Burton has played so far this year.
I agree with you. That was one I was going to mention, Steve. And I, you know, John Steiff and I were talking last week. We think Richmond, we weren't sure, and more we're looking at scores and stuff. I think Richmond's going to win this game. Richmond's played really well, really found itself against Woodstock North in that what we thought at the time was an upset, and really playing some great ball. Another one I'm looking at is one we touched on earlier, was Marion Central going to Niles Notre Dame, you know, kind of playing for its playoff life. So, well, thanks a lot, guys. We will be back next week with another Illinois Football Podcast.